You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get right to the romance and find the way to wow this Valentine's with 1-800-Flowers.com. From classic roses and bouquets to decadent chocolate-covered berries, gourmet treats, and more, surprise your Valentine with 1-800-Flowers.com. Right now, get the 18-stem Enchanted Rose Medley for $39.99 or upgrade to 24 red roses for $10 more. Go to 1-800-Flowers.com/tune in. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/tune in.
Mirror man, you twist and turn my mind until I don't know who I am. Mirror man.
Good afternoon and welcome to an On The Whistle podcast. Today I'm joined by Johnny.
How you doing? Nice to be here, Pete. I am Johnny. I'm also one half of the collective known as Fan Favourites with Matt Candela.
Yeah, the Fan Favourites have got some explaining to do today. Explaining. And I'm also here with Matt Candela, and it sounds like he's joined by his daughter as well. She's making the guest appearance today.
Hi, Pete. You all right?
I'm deeply, deeply hungover, but I've gone from feeling quite sad to very perky right now. I'm looking forward to, you know, the great thing about the position that you two have taken is when we win, you're Arsenal fans. It doesn't matter. Like, you're in a good place. And when we lose, you can all gang up on me. But today, it is a win. And it's just, it's going to be a joy to chat on a podcast with you two about some positive things, not about all the bad things that happen. So I'm excited. Let's kick off. Instead of kicking off with like a hot take, I just want to talk about what a roller coaster of emotions that entire 90 minutes was. And actually, even before it, because Matt texts me at like 6 a.m. He was like, that starting 11 is disgusting. And I rolled out in front of the TV and I was beside myself. I was like, he doesn't learn. He's right back at it. With his favorites, we've got all of the pantomime villains out there today. Like let's just talk about that starting 11 because it didn't look like it was going to perform today. Like
it stank the place out, didn't
Matt,
it?
Tell us, yeah.
Well, it just stank the place out, and I think I tweeted, I don't think you can win Premier League games with Willian and Elneny in the starting lineup. I was promptly corrected that. We actually have won two games all season with those two in the starting lineup, which even that piece of information didn't exactly fill me with confidence. And you're just like, you just couldn't see it against a Leicester team who you thought would be smarting after their defeat in midweek. And we just expected more of the same. And then, you know, throw in a tired Xhaka. And some of the other faces who have consistently underperformed, and you just thought, what is he doing? Are we giving up on the league in February?
Johnny, when you saw that starting lineup and you saw that William was there with Mo Elneny in a double pivot of doom with Xhaka, how did you feel? It's a little bit later in the day for you, so what were the emotions?
I'm so pleased we started with this point as well, because, like, you know, some games it almost doesn't matter what the lineup is, the game plays out the way it does, but this was absolutely part of the game experience today, seeing that lineup. Yeah. Like, it was, you have to see, like, holistically how it all panned together. And for me, I have been certainly a critic of Arteta, as people will know by now, but the problem is, for me, what I will not bash him on was that starting lineup, because In my view, he was coming out there, and I mean, that obviously changed a bit as the game progressed anyway, but he went out there and said, I am going all for leather on the Europa League. It ultimately could be the difference between keeping my job and losing my job. And so I am not going to play our best player, Saka, every week when he's one pulled hamstring away from our season collapsing. And Aubameyang, yes, you are going on the bench, even though you've started to hit a bit of form again. And the fact is, for me, it's the same thing with Emery at the end of his tenure, when he messed up those Premier League games and went all in on the Europa League. But in the end, he messed it all up and was rightfully got rid of not long after. So if you're in a position where it's difficult, focusing on one competition fully, I fully get behind. So I was not going to criticise him for that.
Right.
But that being said, I actually thought that we had a loss coming our way when I see a lineup like that, because of all the reasons that you've stated. I mean, Elneny is, you know, in the past hasn't looked fit for purpose. And the, you know, the Willian Pepe combo is inconsistent at best heading into this game. So you're thinking, here we go. It's going to be Barnes. It's going to be Vardy. And when we have such a calamitous start with
again,
Xhaka and Willian looking like the likely lads on the wing out there before Mari forgets what defending means. Then you're thinking, hey, you know, you get what you paid for here, Arteta, with that lineup when we go 1-0 down.
Yeah, I got the text from Matt nice and early. I was like, oh, here we go. This is going to be a tough day. And I'm trying my hardest not to react in game and sort of like let things compute. But I was raging. I was raging at that lineup because I was like, okay, so you've taken the first opportunity to put William back in. He's got a 5-year contract on the wing now because he had one good game in midweek. Mo Elneny and Xhaka just they felt like they were going to offer nothing in terms of like forward momentum. And the slow start really crystallized it. You're like, what a calamity. You've got William and Xhaka fucking up. You've got Pablo Marie, a super agent special, backing off like an amateur, and then you've got Mo Elneny not getting across quick enough, and you just it was a terrible start. But I did ring I ring around people that I like, the work in the game, and at halftime sometimes just sort of get a more professional analysis of what's going on, and people were saying it was a defensible position because you know, like you just said, Johnny, Saka has to be rested. You can't be selfish about a young player's career. And we saw what happened to Jack Wilshere. And I think there was a lot of that talk in the week from fans saying, you know, the power. I think Jack Wilshere actually went in the press and said, you know, I wish I'd listened to my body more when I was younger, because that season they were telling me not to play. And I was like, no, I'm good. So you got to rest Saka. I think we've taken too many risks with Thomas Partey this season. And I think the club are thinking about Benfica. And I think the big one that they're really thinking about, all the eggs are going in the basket of Spurs. Spurs and Jose Mourinho this season. And Arsenal fans' perception of the year slightly changes. And then he was justified, because the reason that we've been so bad this season is our senior players have not played to the right standard. It's not that they're not good enough. We know Willian is good enough, but he hasn't hit the right standard. But my word, were we wrong? We controlled the first... And, you know, just before I leave off on this ramble, I know this is a really obvious thing to say, but goals change the perception of performances. And I know that it sounds so stupid to say it, but that half on the group chats went from Brendan Rodgers has got Arteta's number to tactical masterclass, because we went into halftime leading. If we'd gone in losing that 1-0, you would have said Leicester are letting us control the game and they've struck yeah. us, and this is smart. But then you finish that 90 and you're like, wow, Leicester really didn't show up. Brendan Rodgers couldn't get a turn out of his players when they're on the charge for the title this season. So good, a good game, right? But let's carry on down the path. We go down after 6 minutes.
And just on that though, we do seem to be conceding a lot of early goals.
Yeah,
definitely. And for me, that is a legit criticism against Arteta that has to be, you know, still holds water at this stage, because we can't keep doing it, because we're not always going to have performances like we had today after the initial going behind. Because the fact is, you know, sometimes we start poorly and we stay poor. You know, today was bucked that trend, really. So we can't get into it or keep this habit going of going behind so early. And when I say Arteta, I mean, it's all managers. It's the coaches. It's people to be out the getting the players ready, that process, to be able to start it from minute one and hit it at the right level. That has to be a management thing as much as a player thing. So
I think the thing that keeps me going, that keeps me positive on that, is there's a big difference between like structural issues, you know, where like under Unai Emery, you know, we were porous all the time. When they're bad individual errors, like Danny Ceballos with that header last week, it shouldn't be part of the makeup like that. But, you know, I think you can iron those kinks out. And also, like, we seem to get punished to the absolute max every time we make an error at the moment. And the same today. And it wasn't, you know, I think we can iron those kinks out. I hope. But like the bigger problem for me, Johnny, on that is it's 6 minutes in. Like, you play Sunday league football. It's like, keep everything together for the first 15 minutes. Nothing stupid. And, you know, Manchester City, you ruined the game. Maybe we would have got a draw if we hadn't conceded after 2 minutes. But to do it the next game in the Premier League, that's when you say, like, come on, guys, what are we saying?
I think it's away from home as well. It's the classic away from home is don't concede the first 20. You know, get your eye in and then start passing it around. That was always the classic way of playing an away game. It's just the first thing you've got to do is not concede. And now it's, you know, it's without, you know, being putting too much of a damper on it, it's Villa, it's City, it's this game, you know, and it just makes it so much harder to dig ourselves out of those positions. And look, a lot of the players deserve a lot of credit because they seem to be doing it so often that their head doesn't really go down afterwards. But I was worried because, you know, I've often talked about thinking, you know, in the first 2 minutes what Arsenal you've got. And after the first few minutes of this game, I was pretty sure that we had an Arsenal that was going to completely capitulate to Leicester.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you guys are right. That's kind of the point I was making. It wasn't like, as you say, Pete, a big structural thing, but it's part of the job of the coaching team is to get the players ready to match the intensity. It's nothing to do with we're starting in a weird shape. It's players are just switching off too early. And if we're consistently putting teams out where people are having brain farts within 5 minutes, you know, something's got to change there. And we have to get to the stage where we're coming out, you know, playing like this is a cup final at Wembley from minute one, because otherwise we have our brain fart moment, then get over it. But it might be too late for us at that point. And by the way, that's the last negative thing I'm going to say, because overall it's a very, 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 very good day. But I just, you know, that is when we, as fans, we also want to, when we see things that would concern us, it's worth raising it, because, you know, the reality is it needs to be in the club's outlook, like their consciousness when moving forward, so we can get rid of these mistakes for the bigger games that are to come.
Yeah. And when you're analysing a performance, don't just cherry pick the good bits, because it comes back to haunt you later on. And I think the unforced errors, bad starts is something that, and the unforced errors one, you know, you're going to have to improve that with players at some point, right? I'm not sure that Pablo Mari looks at the level he should be. He doesn't. He's not the play out the back defender I hoped. And the backing off just seemed really weak for a 26-year-old, you know, championship winning defender that's come over from Brazil. But, you know, we can talk about that later. I actually just want to get straight into the good stuff, because imagine this a few weeks ago. Willian and Pepe lead the charge for getting Arsenal back on track. Like I didn't want to like Willian's performance today, but I thought he was tidy. I thought he was efficient. I thought he set a really good tempo. And Pepe on the right in the first half, he was unplayable.
He was unplayable. He gave that left back an absolutely torrid time. And it was great to see. There's a player in there. He definitely needs quite a tight system to operate in. But there's definitely a role for him to play start 20 odd games a season, at least, against certain opposition, and especially away from home. When you play more on the counter, maybe he's our sort of away game hero.
Johnny, went right today with Pepe? How did that happen?
So the thing is about Pepe, and we have talked about this a number of times on this pod, about the fact that, you know, first of all, when we were looking, you know, when he's having shocking weeks all the time, we're like, oh, are we going to have to ship him on? And ultimately, we couldn't even get a reasonable return. He was in such bad form. Yeah. But, you know, the fact that we even said back then, if you can get him playing well, he will be worth, if not something to the value we signed him for, something pushing on that. Like, that's the talent. He's got so many of the attributes. He can hit a dead ball well. He can deliver crosses well. He could go past the player. He can finish well. He can get up in the air even, you know. But the thing is we see all of those little highlights just really inconsistently appearing. It's like one moment he might finish well, but for the rest of the game, he's been anonymous. And I think lately he started to, because if you actually look at his last 10 games, I do think you actually plot improvement there. He has been, his average performance, you know, has improved over that period of time. And now I feel like, From the moment we introduced Saka and Emil Smith Rowe into the team, and I believe, as I've spoken about before, that he almost got charged with their energy and enthusiasm and just a kind of blueprint of how to succeed in this formation. And ever since then, he has been playing much better. Of course, he's not quite the consistent player that we had hoped we would have signed for £72 million. But the fact is I have seen more than enough promise in over the last 10 games, for my money, to think that there is a chance of Pepe, you know, genuinely becoming an influential player and a potential game changer at the highest level, which is something that, you know, can't come soon enough for Arsenal.
I think that one of the things that I'm really enjoying about his game at the moment is if he's not getting a lot of the ball, he goes looking for it now. And I feel like he's lacked so much confidence in his Arsenal career that when things don't go right from him from the off, like, talk about knowing what Pepe you're going to get. You generally know after the first 10 minutes. But what I loved about his performance today is he was getting a lot of the ball. And then when he wasn't, he started coming inside to influence. I think I don't know whether he's bulking up a little bit, but he certainly looks like he is more happy in the mix. Like, he's a physical player now, and it looks like he's finding his balance. But I think that one of the owners at Lille said it took a long time for him to settle there as well. But then, because he's shy, and, you know, it takes him a while to work out the environment. But I think that he's just trying to work out what his role in the Premier League is, because, you know, the French league is very, very different. You get a lot more time on the ball, and Lille play a very different game to us. But it's starting to look like, Johnny, you definitely said this a few weeks ago, he's been inspired by the younger kids, right? I think it's like, and the younger kids, like players like Smith Rowe, bringing him into the game. Ødegaard brings him into the game. Like, having a number 10 to play off and knowing that they're going to be quality balls coming in for him to run onto, I think is really helping him. But he's also... Yeah. It's decisive, you know, scoring a goal today. You're like, he popped up in that box. I don't see him in the box that often. He's foxing the boxing. You know, he's getting a better delivery. And I think the most interesting thing is he's almost like that, got that Neymar weaponized, you know, falling over players' legs. You know, I don't know how that first penalty didn't happen. And I don't know how he made it to look so convincing falling over someone's leg. But like that was 2, 3, 4 times today. It was almost like he was nailed on to get a penalty, and that's something that we've lacked.
Yeah, 100%. No, he's he's got a lot of the he's got a lot of what you need to do, and it's taken a while. It's going to be interesting to see whether he can kick on, but yeah, I think we've got to persevere with him. I mean, I still think if we could get some cash for him at the end of this season and move him on, that still might be the best.
You are ruthless. Ruthless.
It still might be the best for all parties in terms of the whole rebuild and what we need to do and where we have good players. But at least it doesn't feel like we've just flushed 72 million down the toilet, which is what it felt like earlier on in the season. The other thing to note, I think, is that terrible spell of his earlier on in the season coincided with a terrible spell for absolutely everyone at the club. Like, who, the only person who possibly came out of that period before Christmas with any credit is probably Saka. He was the only person who you could say was actually doing all right. The rest was just an abomination. So it's certainly promising.
I mean to be honest, like, I know you're still being appreciative of his performances there, Matt. But the idea of selling him in, the summer, I just don't think that's even remotely on the cards, because unless he now goes on a, Lionel Messi run to the end of the season, just scoring every week, we won't get anywhere near the return on value that it would be to try and replace him with another player of even, equal to improving quality. Whilst if we were, to do it from betting odds, if Pepe continues to improve like this to the end of the season, we're better off sticking with him, because he's that close to becoming, he's already playing well. You know, he could be playing really well by the end of the year. And, who knows? We may be going further in the Europa League, and Pepe returning to form might lead to some big performances in that. And at that point, you have to say that, Pepe is seriously pushing for a starting place in our first 11 now, because he can change the game. And obviously, another negative out of the game was the injury to Smith Rowe, which looked like it might keep him out for a slightly longer period. But, we know that even, it's in the starting lineup, Saka's playing, of course, but Saka likes playing with other good players. And I think Pepe gets a lot of joy when playing with Saka. And also, it looks like it will be Odegaard moving forward. And that gives us a lot of hope if Pepe can continue to improve this form. Because, as I say, with these big games coming up, I think we might need something out of him.
You know, the other little observation that I really enjoyed about Nicolas Pepe today, when he scored, everybody went to him. All the subs mobbed him. Like, so he's obviously well-liked as well, And I think that sometimes I wrote that the pantomime villains all kept everybody quiet today. And I think sometimes, I'm certainly guilty of this, but when a player's playing badly, you're like, he's a terrible person. That Willian is a terrible person. And all I've been hearing about Willian is he's actually a good person behind the scenes. And it was, Nicolas Pepe, he's moody and he's withdrawn. That didn't look like a player that people don't get along with behind the scenes. And it's just a small bit, but I loved seeing him feel like, that's the first time I've seen it look like he's part of the fabric of the club.
Definitely. He is, I think, the players would look upon him as a positive element of the team and the squad. Like, even when he doesn't look like a diva or a strop head. The fact is even when it's not going his way, he just it's just because it's not going his way. But it's not because he's not really trying, I don't think. I just don't think that he's been ready for the intensity of the league up until this point. But like you said, you made a very good point earlier, Pete, that I do think he's bulked up a little bit. And that bulk has given him a little bit more fight in the 50-50, challenges. He looks like he's not shirking them as much. And he looks like he's riding them in a way that, Jack Grealish does, where you
yes.
think Jack Grealish plays quite a dainty. But the reality is he's actually a lot stronger and a lot more solid on the ball than what he looks. And when he goes down, it's because he's drawn that foul. And if you draw the foul in dangerous areas, we'll take that. That's not diving. That is waiting for the touch and then taking the foul. That's good play, and it's smart play, which is what's so encouraging about Pepe. Sometimes you can run around a bit like mindlessly, I think, but today he's playing with direction. He knows with a purpose, and that is what's really encouraging to watch.
And I think that Arteta, he seems to have a bit of a track record for helping these players who are like the inside forwards. You know, you've heard it with Sterling credits a lot with being told where to stand, how to play that role. And I think it's interesting that Saka and Pepe are probably the two most improved players at the moment, and both of them play on those inside forward positions. And I think hopefully Arteta's helping them. And I think the other thing that's interesting on the culture piece is, I was just reading this morning about all the stuff that's going on at Schalke, and like the coach got fired.
Well, Christian Gross is out.
Who are two of the players who have been involved in the apparent ousting of the coach? It's Kolasinac and Mustafi.
Oh, beautiful.
And so you're just like,
they were shits behind the scenes. Mustafi was problematic. You
can't underestimate how liberating it must be for some of the players in the dressing room to be a bit of a cultural shift. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what comes out about the difference between the dressing room, you know, post clear out and pre clear out, because we couldn't get rid of those players for the whole first year of Arteta's tenure. But we've now managed to get rid of all of them. And I think you can't underestimate the role of culture, and especially maybe for a player like Pepe, who's not maybe the loudest or the most outspoken, but creating an environment where he feels happy and comfortable and welcomed is definitely going to have an impact on his end products as well, I think.
Toxicity is poisonous. It's like toxicity takes two or three people and it's cancerous in an organization. And especially like when you're young or you're not doing well, it's much easier to follow the negative than trying to be positive off the back. So I think that's a telling point.
I mean, I think what you've both said there is absolutely spot on. It is, you know, I've always thought Mustafi's an absolute clown, a virus of a club. He's just like, I really don't like the guy. I've heard he's an absolute bell end as well. So, you know, just absolute can't stand that mug. Look, at the end of the day, I have been as big a critic of Willian's as anyone out there, to be fair. I've had a few people even say that, why do I hate someone who I look quite like? You know, because I've got the Willian afro. But, I genuinely cannot stand Willian. I just don't like the geezer. I think he's awful, and I think he's been a really poor player for Arsenal so far. However, I have to be able to give credit where credit is due. And even though I don't see a future for Willian ultimately at the club, I really don't. I just don't think he's... I'm not sure this will be a signifier of a real momentum shift over a longer period. But he is playing well. He had a very, very good game today. And, you know, you're talking two assists today, one assist in the week. Like, you know, that just sometimes...
Good assists.
Good assists, exactly.
The free kick was clever today.
And the thing is as well, like, and we all do this as football fans, but we are very emotive. It's a very emotive sport. And we attach storylines and characters the way that you guys were talking about earlier, you know, in terms of, oh, you know, someone's playing bad, so they're a bad person and stuff like that. But the fact is that, you know, when you have a feeling, an emotional feeling against a player, sometimes all you have to do is just look at the stats, because the stats aren't emotional. They are just facts. That's what happened. And if I look at the stats of what Willian's produced over the last two games, it's a very good return from a midfielder in that position. So I can't sit here and start banging on the guy. He is playing well. For, like you said, I don't think he's great, but the other players seem to like him. So, like, I will hold my hands up and say, well done, he shut me up. And, you know, until the next game, I've got no complaints with Willian. He absolutely delivered on his duty and responsibility to the team today. And, you know, it's encouraging.
The thing I'd say, though, is that there's some reasons why we hate Willian that anything about, right? He can't do anything about the fact that he's got a 3-year contract, or that he gets paid 200 whatever thousand pounds a week, or that he came from Chelsea. Like, he just can't do anything about that. And those are all contributing factors to the reason why we hate him. But there's a couple of other things that he's done which he can, and even poor form. Like, there's not a lot he can do. What can a player do apart from get through it? The thing that's really made me angry towards Willian over the last, you know, since he arrived after the first game of the season is the perceived lack of effort in games, in terms of pressing, in terms of running, in terms of looking focused. He's just looked totally lackadaisical. He looked totally directionless. And I think that was the difference today, which is, you actually saw him pressing players. And when he was running, the runs looked like he actually wanted to get on the end of something rather than he was just stat padding or, and he was actually trying things. So, look, it's positive. But I think that, you can't underestimate what a bit of effort looks like and how much that matters to the fans. And I think that, yes, he got the assist and that was great. But more encouraging was that he actually looked like he wanted to make stuff happen. And maybe it's been a confidence thing. But look, it arrives, so we're better off with it. And look, he's not going anywhere, so we need him to start performing. And it was interesting on the back of the article that came out, which was clearly some sort of clickbait to wind up Arsenal fans, where he said he never wanted to leave Chelsea and all that stuff. But something fired him up today, and thank God, because
stats-wise, guys, created 3 chances. He had the 13 of his attempted passes in the final third found their man. He attempted 9 crosses, 6 of them found a player. Like, I don't know what clicked, but sometimes things just click, right? You know, you've been at Chelsea for 6-7 years. And then you move over to a young team with a young manager. Maybe it's difficult to work out what your role is. But the question is, is it like the broken clock thing that we were talking about on Thursday? That's the, has Arteta just worked out a role for him? Or alternatively, he hasn't really played much since Christmas. And since Christmas, we've found a number 10. We've signed a number 10 on loan. We've reshaped our whole approach to the game. And just maybe the team is more balanced for a player like him because it can absorb some of his weaknesses.
Yeah, I think all of the points made are really valid, to be fair. Like, I'm not sold on whether this is, as you say, Pete, a kind of structural shift where we've unlocked his potential, as opposed to, like you say, a wrong clock is right every now and again. And but for some of the reasons that Matt was drawing upon, the fact is that he can't be, because of what we saw with him at Chelsea, it's not like he's forgot how to play football. He can play football. Yes, he might be a bit slower. He might even be a bit weaker since, the prime of his career. That kind of happens with age. But he knows how to pass a ball. He knows how to pick a pass, to shoot. I mean, when's the last time we even see him shooting? But I think that is why our perception of his performances were that they were just lacking effort. And I think, I don't know whether it's the fact that at Chelsea, I used to always, from the outside looking inwards, I used to always think that he was someone who got worse as the season went on. He was one of those players that would like fatigue and just not be able to be turning it on in, March and stuff. It was, and they would always have to rely on Hazard just doing it on his own by this point of the season. And whereas Willian hasn't been played that much, so he's actually looking quite fresh at this point, which is bizarre because he hasn't been running before. It's a handy thing when you don't try for half a season. You've got loads of legs in the second half of the season. It might be a tactic some coaches use going forward. But the thing is, for me, it looked like they were playing with hunger. And maybe when we talk about the fact that Pepe has gained a lot of his influence from Saka and Smith-Rowe's energy, it almost seems like because it's spread and it is contagious, now Pepe is generating that enthusiasm in other players like Willian, because he looks like he actually wants to do something now. So that was a great performance today.
What a thought. Willian is now inspired by Pepe.
Exactly.
They're all inspired by Granit. And one happy family.
But I think the point that Matt made earlier about culture, it's like, you know, there was a lot of kryptonite in the squad and now it's cleared. And, you know, Willian is part of a Chelsea, you know, has been part of a Chelsea dynasty that has downed managers. So when they smell blood in the water, it's like, fuck it. But now they know that Arteta's not going anywhere. And also, you know, at a real base level, nobody wants to be disliked, especially athletes, right? No one wants to sit on a 2.5-year contract and be the next Winston Bogard or the next Mesut Ozil. You want to enjoy the last years of your career. Like, I don't think anybody wants to be like Mesut Ozil. Like, what a horrible way to end, a big tenure at a club. So I'm happy that he's found a bit of magic today. I like that he popped up in sort of those spaces between the lines. Like, he had a good shot early on. But the key thing is that we pay 250 grand a week because when the chips are down, you want to be able to look at a Premier League winner who's a Brazilian international to pick you up. And today I felt like he led. Like, I felt like it was, not like a chest pumping leadership, but lead by example, efficiency, moving the ball fast, showing up, and like wanting delivering decisively. Yeah, I really, really like that free kick because, you know, we're one of the best teams in the Premier League for defending set pieces because we've got Georgeson in, but we've been terrible. Like, our corners have been shocking, but Martin Odegaard never hits the front post. He always goes into the mix. And Willian's free kick today, it looked like it, something had been worked on the training ground. And David Luiz popping up.
Outstanding header, wasn't it?
Another Marmite player. You're like, David, don't do this to me. Don't make me want to give you another year deal.
they're all just doing it just in time when you're just going to, we're going to have a good end of the season. You know, get up to seventh and then they're all going to get handed out. The 1 year to Louise, the two year to Lacazette. Maybe even give Willian a little 1 year just to like sweeten him up, get him feeling good.
Yeah, so I want to move into the second half. I mean, we barely even got out the first half. But like, firstly, we haven't had a good record of going a goal down and clawing back. And we did it in the week and we did it again today. The difference between going in 1-0 down and 2-1 up is obviously huge for confidence. But I actually wanted to talk about another performance. Like, firstly, a bit of a worry that Smith Rowe went off. Like, it looked like I couldn't work out whether he was pointing at his ankle or he's holding his stomach because he's sick. Because he looked a bit peaky, didn't he? But Martin Odegaard came on. And I think his last two performances for Arsenal have felt a little bit Mesut-ish, you know, not really involved. Like the Manchester City game, he didn't have the confidence to turn with the ball. Thought he was very quiet against Benfica. But he came out of the traps when he came on. And I thought for like the 50 minutes that he played, he really dictated play. And there was some saucy moments. There was a little chipped through ball for Cedric. I thought he pulled levers, and the touch for the goal, like that goal wouldn't have happened 4 months ago because we wouldn't have had somebody to sort of guide that ball through to Willian. But that silky touch, that vision, I think that's why everybody was excited about Martin Odegaard. And I felt that those 50 minutes said a lot about why they hired him like he's a fucking freelancer, like why we hired him and why we want him for next season. So like let's talk about the second half, because the second half was about control, right? You go 2-1 up, it didn't feel like panic mode.
No I and it's, you know, I'm so pleased you've gone on this point, because this is exactly where I was thinking with regards to the game. I text my mates in my WhatsApp Arsenal group, and you know, I said exactly the same thing you said, Pete. I said that Odegaard touch was disgusting. And yes. it literally we don't score that goal before he's there. No one else does that. You know, I mean, maybe Saka could do that. I think Saka could do that. But when Saka's not playing, like, Odegaard is the only geezer who sees that and can move his feet in that way. It's actually excellent, excellent creativity, creativity at that point. And for me, I think we're starting to see what kind of player he actually can be for us now, and how what added value he provides to the team. I think that when we have player the likes of Elneny and people like that on the field, there's a natural regression in our passing tempo and our aggressive passing forward. Whereas Odegaard is an antidote to that. He, when he's on the field, he does want to do, he wants to make smart passes. It's almost like, what's your reason for even wanting to play the game? It's like his is to play very high-level technical football and create opportunities for his excellent passing. You can see that's what gets him off. Do you know what I mean? And I think that having a player like that who constantly looks forward with his passing, who constantly wants to take on the ambitious ball, but then also has the technical acumen to be able to pull these passes off, is something that we have sorely needed in this Arsenal team, because that is the kind of creativity that can ultimately always unlock a high level offence, which we've not looked like we've had any chance of having for quite some time.
I think the efficiency is a really important word with Odegaard, because forward passing, if it's not accurate, can be problematic, especially for this Arsenal team. And you know, think back to Alexis and how often he gave the ball away. There was one bad moment where, like, he's, you know, I think he was 23 out of 25 passes found a man today, but there was one that was, oh no, you've set Leicester up, like Danny Ceballos style. But all 13 of his passes in the final third found a man, and that's a level of maturity for a 22-year-old that you want. He's not creative for the sake of being creative. He thinks about those passes and he does it in a split second. Like, I love that somebody said the other day that he's a low risk player, and I was like, he's a low risk player because he thinks about the final ball. He's not low risk because he can't play those sublime little chips and dinks. So and it shows again. It's like Pep Guardiola said last week, after the game or before the game, he said tactics are nothing without players. You know, you can have the best ideas, but they're nothing without players. And I think that that's been true of the Arsenal system. And we're starting to, you know, Arteta plays football like he was a player, was the sort of thing before Christmas. But now he's got the players in the system, we're starting to see more ambition.
I don't know if Matt's back there, but I was going to say anyway, with regards to Arteta, like, This is one of the things why I don't think that, you know, without trying to make it vitriolic in this kind of, you know, hounding out a manager way, it was more about, I think Arteta should be feeling pressure, or should have been, he should still be feeling pressure, you know. And pressure in elite sport is not always a bad thing, because the thing about it is Arteta hasn't got the time to just cruise us through a season that has been deeply disappointing. Like, he should have urgency with regards to his plan. He should be looking at this and going, I need to start getting things right quick, because it isn't going to be, you know, a bunch of knee-jerk fans calling from my head if after a season like this, if we crash out of everything. You have to show us, you have to give us something to get behind, something to hope for. Because without that, you know, why should he stay on? So I am pleased to see that he's kind of got that pressure. And now I think that pressure has forced him to almost take the handbrake off and just go, you know what, I'm going to have to start showing what we can do offensively, because trying to just blame it on the players we currently have when years are going to go past, that's not a good enough excuse. You give us the lot now. Do you know what I mean? Show us what we could be, because one way or another, Arsenal fans are having a referendum on Arteta, and the one way of you know, putting Arteta's best foot forward is by really letting us play with freedom and seeing what, letting a fan see what Arsenal could be if it comes together.
Yeah, and just before I let Matt in, like Matt's done so much, like watching Matt trying to escape his daughter making noise on a podcast is a joy. I think he's walked about 6 miles from this podcast just trying to hide in his house. But I actually think that Arteta definitely listens to the podcast because he's been taking the criticism from Johnny quite seriously, because there was a couple of quotes that came out before the game, and Arteta said, "We are rebuilding. We're in a rebuilding moment, but at the same time, this club cannot stop. This club cannot be thinking this is a project. We have to win, and we have to be one of the top teams in the country straight away. And there is no time to do that unless you are winning." So I think he is very, very aware. Like I saw the starting lineup today, and I was like, "You're too fucking comfortable. That's your problem. You're too comfortable that you're not going to get fired. So you're indulging. You're indulging these older players." But he got it right, so we can't have that conversation. But I do think he's acutely aware that fans are coming back into the ground very, very soon. And he's got to get it right, because the fans will be on his back. But wins like today give him more breathing room when things inevitably go wrong next season for a little bit. So Matt, I wanted to, now you're back in the room. What's your take on Odegaard and Johnny was referencing?
Look, I think being a Premier League manager is so hard. You know, when you hear Liverpool fans calling for Klopp's head after the seasons that they've had, after a few games, you realise that it's just one of the most impossible jobs that's out there. And I think the good thing is that it feels like we have created a stable, secure environment. Hopefully, I think there's like a middle ground. Like, you don't want it to be too stable and secure, otherwise you get Arsene Wenger last 10 years. Yeah. But you also don't want to feel like you don't have any time. And I think the team selection and the approach showed a manager this today, and we're post-rationalizing it a little bit, but who knows that he's not going to get fired and has got at least until the end of the season to try and make some progress. And in all reality, he's got this season and next, or at least till Christmas, regardless of what happens, because I think the club will give him another summer and a proper pre-season. And let's face it, you have to also remember, he's played so few games in stadiums. It's very harsh to get a job job in lockdown and then to not see it through after lockdown. You know, it'll never be this hard again.
But he does have to
get credits and he has to just show enough to demonstrate that we are improving. And look, we're all fickle. It's hard. It's like after the City game, we were going, "Are we improving?" Today we're going, "We are improving." You know, I don't think it's a question of are we improving. I think we are improving. I think it's a case of are we improving faster than the competition around us? That's like a really, really key question for me, because Leicester are improving, Aston Villa are improving, Leeds are improving. Like, a lot of these clubs are improving. Are we improving at a much faster pace than them? That's the question I've got. Games like today suggest that we are, but he needs to evidence that, and he really, really needs to demonstrate both with the Europa, but also the league. I think the league is really, really important. He cannot afford to limp in 11th, 12th. The difference between a strong finish and coming in 7th versus 12th will really matter if we don't win the Europa League. Because if we don't win the Europa League, everyone's just going to just go, "I can't believe we finished 10th. I can't believe we finished 12th. He has to have a statistic that says, if the Premier League started on January the 1st this year, we would have got Champions League, and that's the thing that's filling me with confidence. Or we completely re-engineered our team and brought all these young players through so that we can do this season. So it's really, really important. Leicester's a big game. Burnley are like 3-0 down to Spurs at the moment, and we've got them next up. We've got to beat them. We've got to beat Spurs. And if you can get that momentum, which we haven't been able to do all season, by the way, so it's not a foregone conclusion. If we can get that momentum, then It definitely feels like we're improving at least.
Yeah,
Pete.
I was just going to add one thing about, like, because I love the point about pressure. I also think if the healthy pressure is what you need, because we saw what negative pressure did to Unai Emery, and I think with a young squad, if Arteta was feeling like he might get fired today, we probably would have played Saka, and we might have injured him. So having I'm going to be here for longer than the next three games also allows him to make better decisions for the health of the squad, not just the health of the table. Sorry, Johnny, back in.
To even jump on that point, but the one that Matt raised there, because that was certainly something I was going to say, I think it's bang on. For me, you look at the way we are set up now. We one way or another, have had a shocking season. Yeah, today feels good, but just like when we lose a bad game, you know, it feels really bad, and we've had a lot of them this season. So for me, Arteta is in a situation where he needs to win the Europa League to save his job. I don't actually think it will come down to that. For instance, if we got to the final, he would probably keep his job anyway with regards to the people who would have to make the decision to get rid of him anyway. But if we get banged up by Olympiacos and knocked out, he's got to go. And I'm not even joking. He can't be sitting there going, but do you remember when we played well against Leicester? That is not a highlight of a season. This game means everything and nothing today. It adds a bit of padding if we don't win the Europa, but we go far in it. Then it's like, okay, he has got that big game mentality. He can get us far in competitions, but also he's shown glimpses in the league of being able to compete at the top level. But, you know, let's be realistic. If we get knocked out of the Europa League to Olympiacos, season over in March, I don't care about beating Leicester with our B team. Are you kidding me? Come on, guys.
The fan favourites sell Nicolas Pepe and Arteta out. Honestly, I think the favourability ratings are going to drop after this one. One of the things that
I think the most interesting thing that's happened since Christmas is this slightly more expansive way of playing with more creative players. You know, I like it when you have those, like the sort of Saka, ESR, Odegaard, three behind the lead striker, and all of that stuff is sort of, as a fan, it's sort of exciting me, which is why I was a bit depressed when I saw the lineup, because it felt like this felt like a pre-Christmas lineup where we were just going to try and like throw the dice and hope that something came of it. But because I think it can work in a number of different ways. If you don't have to have the results, if you can clearly see that there is tangible improvement, I think that's going to be enough for Arteta. I personally don't want Arteta out, regardless of what happens this season, because I'm like, it's basically March. Winning the Europa is a long shot. Do I have faith in him to make some good decisions in terms of player acquisition? Well, based on Thomas Partey, based on Gabriel, based on bringing ESR through, I do think, you know, we are now in a position where we have seven players in a first 11 in terms of Leno, Tierney, Saka, Partey, ESR, Aubameyang, who have got the bases of a top four team. We're just missing, you know, probably another four players. So if we could get two of them this summer and two of them the summer after, you know, we could be challenging as a top team in 2 years, which I think is a more realistic way of looking at it.
I'm gonna step in and be unapologetically the context guy here. And you used to irritate me back in the day with Wenger when fans used to do that. I'm now that guy. So what? you two are gonna have to deal with it. But if we accept that the season was absolutely shocking until Christmas, and we accept that Arteta did not get fired for that, and that now we're judging him like from Christmas onwards. And that's the only way that I think that we can look at the season, because what's done is done, and he didn't get fired for it. If last weekend we were top three for, we were fifth for points per game in the league since Christmas. We were top three for goals per game. And we were top three as like one of the best defensive teams in the Premier League. That is progress. The football is becoming more expansive. The young players are getting better, and he's reviving dead Arsenal careers. And that's all you want to say. So if we don't win the Europa League, we've got to beat the team that downed the Premier League last season with COVID, right? We've got to avenge that defeat. That was a horrible defeat as well. And I think that, you know, I'd love us to be seen as a bit of a cup team as well. And I think that win against Benfica allowed for the win against Leicester. Beat Olympiacos and carry that momentum through to the Spurs game puts us in a really good position. So I think if the season goes off the rails, Johnny, and we lose 10 games in a row, then we can start talking about the job. But if there's an upward trajectory in the league, if we continue to dominate games, and look, since Christmas, Pep Guardiola said, look, you look at the Arsenal games, they dominate every game, even when they lose. And we have consistently dominated that. Like, we've seen that Leicester game time and time again, even when we've lost since Christmas. And we couldn't say that before. So performances are getting better. Players are getting better. The style of football is getting better. And I don't think his career is contingent on Europa League, but I think you need to give the fans something to grab hold of. Last week, how did we end the podcast? It was like, get some mini narratives going. Europa League, mini narrative number one. We're still in it by the skin of our teeth, but we're still in it. End Leicester's Premier League title.
Well, I think the other piece of the Olympiacos one is it gives Arteta a chance of revenge. And I think all we're looking for now is improvement. So if we can say, yeah, we didn't have the nous to beat Olympiacos last year, but we did this year, we learned from our mistakes. It helps with that young manager narrative, because it's like, yeah, I am making mistakes, but I'm learning from them faster and I'm managing to move on. So I think the Olympiacos is actually a dream draw for Arteta, in that it allows us to, it's going to allow him, when we beat them, to have that story, hopefully.
I agree. Everything you're saying here, by the way, I do agree with. You know, and there is certainly room, but what I'm trying to provide is context as well for our, like, you know, I'm trying to add a little bit of kind of balance in terms of how excited we could be, which everyone's going to feel excited now. But what I'm saying is, we're two bad losses away to Olympiacos from this being a completely different... Like, there's no way I'm going to be sitting here talking about the Leicester win if we crash out to Olympiacos in poor form. So I think our confidence is so fragile at the moment. I want us to... You know, if you're talking to me, if we're doing this pod in 5 weeks' time and we've put together five wins or four wins, then of course I'm going to be singing a different tune. Like, because the fact is we can't, you know, make these big jumps. I'm talking about, you know, up to now in the season, we're mid-table and have looked poor. So as much as we can't, you know, take one bad result in isolation, we can't take one good result in isolation. If we string the Europa League wins together with the win today and we beat Tottenham, you know, as you were hinting at, Pete, then of course it would be a real feather in Arteta's cap. And something you can point to and say, look, we've turned a corner here. But right now, if we don't get results in the games going forward, then I'm sorry, I'm not sold on this as being some revolutionary moment yet. It has to maintain to, well, you know, and be positive for Arteta.
I think the other thing is you look at, like, because one of the other narratives that's helped Arteta is you go, look, to be honest, no one could have come in and turned things around. Things were such a mess. And that's a narrative that has helped him. But you look at Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea, I mean, they were like us. They were complete shambles. I mean, with better players and a ton of money invested in the summer. But, you know, he's managed to get a 10-game unbeaten streak.
I disagree there, Matt. Like, fixing a top four team that had £250 million worth of talent added to it is a bit different from fixing 10 years worth of decline, no Premier League title in 14 years. And Thomas, like, Frank Lampard got a turn out of those players last season, you know, and I don't think Chelsea were that bad. Frank Lampard just got fired because that's what Chelsea do. But I don't think we can say that, like, Thomas Tuchel's done the job yet. And secondly, it's like, it's not comparable on any level. Like, we're shifting a mentality of a club with bad players. And I think that maybe not bad players, that's unfair, but I don't think that's comparable. I think more comparable is Jurgen Klopp had a winning machine, one of the best Premier League teams we've ever seen last year, and we're within spitting distance of him, and that's the best coach in the world, you know, or second best coach in the world to Pep Guardiola.
I mean, I know we're Arsenal fans, but you know, we're only 8 points off fourth.
Can we dream? Can we dare to dream?
I don't think we can, because we're 8 points off fourth, but teams that are currently out of fourth are teams like Liverpool, Chelsea.
But I think the season's a write-off for a lot of clubs, right? The league table, I know that we're probably like 10th or 11th or whatever, but you are literally a five-game run from jumping four or five places. The problem is this season, we just haven't had that four or five game run, right?
Yeah.
And we need to. And I think, Johnny, the strength of having a good run into the end of the season, for me, comes back to what the fans are going to be like in the stadium. If we go into the summer sad, it will take two bad losses and then there'll be planes flying over the ground. If we go in strong and we get to the semi-final of the Europa, and we beat Spurs, and you know, we get a draw against Liverpool or whatever, I think fans will be excited that there's a prospects coming, and you know, that we're going to compete next season. And I think that's going to be the main objective. And I honestly think that a lot of the thinking around today's lineup was Arteta knows he has to beat Spurs.
There's one other thing that I think would be enormously helpful to Arteta, which is, can we demonstrate by the end of the season that Martinelli has a future as a first-team player at Arsenal? Because, you know, we've got ESR, we've got Saka through. If we could get that third player who feels like they can be a first-team regular for years to come and has got huge upside and potential, and we can get a lot of the blooding done this season, so start of next season, a bit like we did with Saka. I mean, you forget that Saka didn't start the first games this season. You know, he didn't start the FA Cup final last year. Whereas it would be nice, at least for Martinelli, to get that run of games and for us to do that. Because striker's going to be a key position in the summer. And if we could prove that he could work as a centre forward, it could save us 40, 50 million in the window.
It's a massive point, to be fair. And I didn't actually, because we were being a bit positive, I didn't actually bring up the point that I had no issues with Arteta's lineup today in terms of it being perceived to be a weakened lineup, you know, with regards to the fact that we've prioritised Europa clearly and being fit for that. But the one gripe I had was Martinelli not playing. And obviously, for obvious reasons, because going in, I never want to see Willian play over Martinelli, despite how the game went on to end up. But to be honest, that's still true anyway. I think the point Matt made, striker is going to be a key position for us. We've got two guys who, obviously, Aubameyang at his best is absolutely world-class anyway, but we've got two strikers who I think both are limited for different reasons in that role, in the way that the striker role has evolved for what Arsenal now require in this setup. And so if Martinelli could have a good run and provide at least a real promise that he could take over that role, I think, you know, it would be seriously, seriously beneficial to Arsenal moving forward, because we might be able to focus on different areas when we're building this team.
It's got to be, Martinelli's got to be a striker, right? I don't think he gets minutes if he's playing on the left or the right at the moment. But I do also understand why he's not getting minutes in that role at the moment, because Lacazette was brilliant today. Lacazette has been brilliant for a while, and Aubameyang is one of the best strikers in the world. Both of them aren't complete, but I think that it's difficult to argue that Martinelli should be starting as a nine at the moment. But also, it is a little bit depressing that just listening to the way Arteta talks about Willian in the press compared to how he talks about Martinelli. But I don't know. It's like, on the one hand, you're like, we need performances and we need points, otherwise we're going to get rid of Arteta.
Yeah.
And then on the other, you're like, but we should be giving, you know, chances to a player. Like, Martinelli blows really hot or freezing cold. But I think he's been a bit unfairly punished since the Villa game. But you know, like that's part of being a young player. And I don't think you get an automatic start. But the good thing is, at least we know that we don't have a Jose Mourinho manager. He does want to, he does give players, when you perform, you get minutes. Look at Smith Rowe, look at Saka, look at Odegaard. So I've got hope, and he's tied down to a 5-year deal, so we don't need to worry about it right now. Right. Well, we've done over an hour today. So, you know, good performances drive good podcasts. I want to say a big thanks. Johnny, do you want to tell everybody about your YouTube channel and your podcasts?
Well, I'm going to focus more on my fatherhood podcast today because the season 2 is out. I've dropped the first episode today, interviewing Babatunde Olise, who people might know off Celeb Gogglebox. He was on that. And, yeah, we're talking about his experience as a dad and, yeah, naming children, which was a whole funny process for him. So if you want to listen, it's the How's Your Father podcast, available where you get your podcasts.
Awesome. And I will share that link on the blog so the readers can get access to that. Matt, I know that you don't want to talk about your business as ever, but I just want to say a big thanks for coming on and doing about 6 miles trying to escape your daughter. That was very fun.
Well, I was just thinking, if you're talking about naming your kids, I mean, it's difficult to look further than Thierry, Paddy, or Tony, really, as a boy.
Or let's be honest, after today, I'm calling my kids William.
Willie.
Yes. Thanks for joining. If you're listening, you know what to do. Give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Share this podcast with your friends and tell everybody how great it is. And tune in next week for an On the Whistle after the Burnley game, where we'll have some guest stars next week from the Touchy Gooners podcast. And yeah, so from us, ciao for now.
Ciao for now.
Peacock streaming, the biggest live events. From Super Bowl 56 to complete coverage of the Winter Olympics. It's all the unbelievable sports to love. Sign up now at peacocktv.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.